Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I want to start today with a shared frustration. I think anyone who has spent more than, 5 minutes with a large language model has run into this.
Oh, yeah.
You're in a great workflow. You ask for something specific, maybe a bio of some niche academic or a legal citation, and the AI looks you in the digital eye and just makes something up.
The confident fabrication.
Right. It doesn't say, I don't know. It just invents a court case that never happened. Or it gives a real person a PhD they never earned. We call it a hallucination. And, you know, usually the conversation just stops there. It's a bug. It's a glitch.
Stomp it out.
Exactly. Stomp it out.
And that is the standard engineering view. Accuracy is king. But the research we're looking at today suggests we might be diagnosing the patient incorrectly.
Okay, so we're diving into a paper titled Making Sense of Hallucinations by Vagan Terzian and his colleagues. And they open with a premise that, I gotta say, sounds a bit counterintuitive.
It really does.
They argue the problem isn't that the AI is hallucinating. The problem is that we aren't giving it a safe place to do it.
It's such a fascinating pivot. They reframe hallucination not as an error, but as unmanaged imagination. And when you look at how the tech actually works and, you know, how the human brain works, that distinction changes everything.
Unmanaged imagination. I like that. That implies the ability itself isn't the problem.
No.
It's the lack of boundaries.
Precisely. The authors argue that right now we're judging AI against a standard of single world thinking.
Single world thinking.
We expect the machine to operate in this binary universe where things are either true or false.
Well,
full stop. But that's not how intelligence works.
No, it's not how we work at all. And this is where they bring in the neuroscience, which I thought was just a brilliant way to ground the whole argument.
They
talk about the default mode network.
Right. And this is crucial context. When you aren't focused on a specific task, you're just, I don't know, walking the dog or something. Your brain doesn't just go blank.
It doesn't switch off.
No, it switches to the default mode network.
Okay.
And biologically, this thing is expensive. It burns a huge amount of metabolic energy.
So evolution decided it was worth burning all those calories just to, daydream?
To simulate. That's the key. The brain is constantly running offline cognition. It's imagining futures that haven't happened yet. You know, what if I take that new job?
Right. What if I had said that witty thing instead of that awkward thing?
Exactly. We're constantly generating worlds that do not exist in physical reality. They also mention hippocampal replay, which is how we learn from mistakes we haven't even made yet.
So in a very real sense, our own intelligence is built on a foundation of controlled hallucination.
It is. But here's the difference. You have the biological architecture that clearly distinguishes the dream I had last night from the meeting I have this morning.
A mechanism for world separation?
Yes. Large language models, they mimic the generative part. They're excellent at dreaming up worlds, but they lack the structure to know which world they're currently in.
So when ChatGPT tells me a lie, it's not trying to deceive me. It's suffering from what the paper calls semantic collapse.
Hmm.
It's taking a creative simulation and just flattening it into the fact folder because it only has one folder.
It creates a flat ontology. Everything is treated as equally real. And the solution this paper proposes is to stop trying to suppress the imagination, because that's where all the good stuff comes from, and instead build what they call semantic guardrails.
Now, guardrails is a huge buzzword in AI right now, but it usually just means don't let the AI say bad words. This is something much, much deeper, right?
Oh, totally. This isn't filter you slap on at the end. This is a fundamental restructuring of how knowledge is even stored. It moves us away from a static database of truths to a dynamic system of possible worlds.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics. The paper introduces a concept called atomic triple induction. That sounds intimidating.
It sounds like something from a physics textbook, I
know.
But it's actually a very elegant concept. So in the world of knowledge graphs, the basic atom of information is a triple.
Subject, verb, object.
Exactly. Paris is located in France. Simple.
Standard database stuff.
In a standard system, that triple gets thrown into the big global bucket of reality. But with atomic triple induction, every single triple initially creates its own tiny independent world.
Wait, so every sentence is its own universe?
At first, yeah. Think of them as emergent worlds.
Right.
Reality isn't some predefined box we cram data into. Reality is built up from all these little clusters of claims. The system then uses rules, the guardrails, to decide how these tiny bubbles can merge or intersect.
So instead of asking, is this statement true? The system is asking, in which context is this statement true?
You've got it. That's the whole shift. It allows the AI to hold conflicting truths simultaneously without, its logic crashing.
The paper uses Sherlock Holmes to explain this, and I think we really should walk through that example because it highlights the trap so perfectly.
It's the perfect logical trap. Okay, so consider three facts. Fact one, Sherlock Holmes is a detective living in London.
Fictional world, got it.
Fact two, London is in England.
Real world.
Fact three, detectives in England are subject to English law.
Real world normative rule. Okay, so basic syllogism. If A implies B and B implies C, logic says Sherlock Holmes is subject to English law.
And boom, there's the problem.
Yeah.
If your AI concludes, yes, Holmes is subject to English law, it's implying he's a real citizen who can be arrested by the Met.
That's a hallucination. False in the real world.
But if the AI says no, he isn't, then it's being stupid about the story. Because in the books, he absolutely has to follow the law. If he shoots someone, Lestrade arrests him. That's part of the narrative logic.
So a single world system has to choose break reality or break the narrative.
Can't handle both.
Yeah.
The guardrails approach solves this by creating a mixed world.
That intersection concept.
Yes. You have world A, the fiction of Doyle. You have world B, geographic reality. The system sees that London is an object that exists in both worlds. So it creates an intersection, a shared space.
And the fact Holmes follows English law isn't stored in the big reality bucket.
Right.
It's stored specifically in that little intersection bucket.
Correct. It essentially tags that fact. This is true if and only if we are assuming the narrative premises of Conan Doyle. It doesn't leak back and corrupt the database of real British citizens.
That seems like such a small distinction, but it solves the whole lying problem. The AI isn't lying anymore. It's just reporting on a specific slice of a multiverse.
And this gets so much more complex when you leave the relatively safe world of Sherlock Holmes, where physics is still normal, and you go to a world like Harry Potter.
Right. The ontological regimes, as they call them.
That's the term. Holmes shares our physics. Harry Potter has alternative physics. You have scientific rules, gravity, thermodynamics, and then you have magic rules. Levitation, polymorphing.
And this is where the danger of semantic collapse gets really serious. You do not want a medical AI confusing a magic spell with a surgical procedure.
That is the absolute nightmare scenario. So the paper details this rule, Rule 4.4, World Preserving Inference. It's a mechanism to prevent that rule leakage. It basically says, if you apply a rule from World A, magic, to an object from World B, reality,
the result cannot exist in World B.
It can't. So if I tell the AI, cast the skull reparo on my broken Toyota Camry.
The AI can reason about it.
Yes, it creates a fixed Toyota, but that object is sequestered in a hypothetical intersection world. It does not update the real-world record of your car in the database.
So it can reason about the magic. If you pass this, the car would be fixed without corrupting the reality of the car. The car is still broken in the driveway.
It keeps the sandbox perfectly sealed. It prevents the logic of one world from kind of infecting the logic of another.
I want to pivot here because talking about wizards and detectives is fun, but the part of the paper that really sold me on the utility of all this was the family plan example.
I agree. This is where it moves from literary analysis to actual, like, strategic planning. They introduce this really relatable scenario, a family, Mary, Robert, and their son, John.
So baseline reality world zero is Mary and Robert are married. They have one child, John.
Correct. That is the hard fact. But humans, we're planners. We live in the future. So Mary has a hallucinated world, what the paper calls an anticipatory world, where she imagines having a future daughter named Sophia.
Okay, so in Mary's personal simulation, John has a sister.
And Robert has his own simulation. He's imagining a future son, Tom. So in his world, John has a brother.
And if you feed this into a standard data system, you get chaos. Reality says only child. Mary says has sister. Robert says has brother. A normal database would just flag this as a huge error.
Or worse, it would try to merge them into some mess where John suddenly has two existing siblings, which is wrong.
Right.
The guardrails framework treats Mary's plan and Robert's plan as first-class citizens. They aren't errors. They are valid anticipatory worlds.
So the AI can hold all three truths at once, the reality and the two hypotheticals.
And crucially, it can model the intersections of those hypotheticals. It can calculate a future where both Sophia and Tom exist. Maybe they have twins or children, one after the other. It can model a future where neither exists.
This is basically scenario planning for an AI.
It is.
Yeah.
Think about it in a business context. You're a CEO. You have a merger world where you buy a competitor. You have an organic growth world where you launch a new product. Those worlds have different facts, different budgets, different employees even.
No, you can't just average them out. That's useless. You need the AI to treat them as distinct, valid realities so you can compare them properly.
Right. You need an engine that can reason about desire and intent without confusing them with history.
Mm-hmm.
Current LLMs really struggle with this because they tend to blur the is with the might be. This architecture formalizes the might be.
I want to get under the hood for a minute, because a critique of these systems is often that they're too abstract to actually code. But the paper gets very specific about how to build this. They talk about schema coherence and reification.
Right. These are the heavy lifters on the engineering side.
Yeah.
Schema coherence, that's guardrails 5 and 6, deals with the problem that words change meaning depending on what world you're in.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. Take the concept of a soul. If you're in a database of, say, Catholic theology, soul has a very specific definition. It's immaterial, immortal, indivisible.
Okay.
But if you're in the Harry Potter world, a soul is something that can be fractured, split into pieces, and hidden in objects called Horcruxes.
And if you mix those definitions up, you break the logic of both worlds completely.
Exactly. So guardrails 5 and 6 enforce that. If a world invents or redefines a concept, that new definition stays locked inside the container of that world. The system understands that soul theology and soul Potter are homonyms. They share a name, but they're totally different logical objects.
And reification is the tool that lets you stick the label on the right container.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Reification is a fancy word for a simple but really powerful idea, turning a relationship into an object.
Break that down for us.
Okay, so in a standard graph, a relationship is just a line connecting two dots. You have Harry, a dot, connected by a line called Fudge the Voldemort, another dot. The problem is you can't really describe a line. You can't stick a label on a line that says this is fictional.
So reification turns the line into its own dot.
Exactly. It turns the verb fights into an object itself.
Yeah.
Now that fights is an object, it has surface area. You can attach metadata to it. You can tag it.
Yeah.
Source, fiction, confidence, 100%, context. Book 7.
It's like putting a little luggage tag on the logic itself. So instead of just knowing A is connected to B, you know why and where and in what reality.
That is the perfect analogy. Mm. It makes the context machine readable. Without that, the AI just sees a web of connections. With it, it sees the provenance of those connections.
So zooming out to the big picture here, this paper is essentially taking a shot at one of the biggest dogmas in modern AI. The reward is enough hypothesis.
It's a direct challenge to it, yeah. Reward is enough is the idea, championed by many at places like DeepMind, that if you just give a neural net enough cookies, enough reinforcement learning triggers, it will eventually figure out everything. It'll just deduce logic, truth, reasoning, all to get the reward.
And these authors are saying, no, it won't. You can't bribe an AI into understanding philosophy.
They argue that neural networks are fundamentally associative engines. Probability machines. They don't know things. They predict tokens. To have true reasoning, to understand the difference between a fictional detective and a real city, you need explicit structure. You need a symbolic architecture wrapped around the neural brain.
So it's a call for hybrid systems.
Yes. Use the LLM for what it's good at. Creativity, that's the gas pedal. But use the semantic guardrails for the structure. That's the steering wheel and the map.
It's interesting because it feels like we're trying to make the AI more human, but not in the way people usually mean it. We're not trying to give it feelings. We're trying to give it compartmentalization.
Which is a key survival trait for humans. I have my work mode. I have my parent mode. I have my anxiety about the climate mode. These are all different worlds I inhabit.
And when those boundaries break down,
that's when we dysfunction. That's when we have intrusive thoughts, or when anxiety overrides logic. That is, you know, human semantic collapse.
The paper wraps up with this nod to a philosopher I hadn't heard of, Alexius Meinong, and his theory of objects. It's a bit heady, but it really stuck with me.
It's the theory that there are things that do not exist but still are.
Right. Sherlock Holmes does not exist. I cannot go and shake his hand. But we can talk about him. We can analyze the psychology. We can debate his methods. In some ways, he is more real and influential than most people who actually lived in 1890.
And for an AI to be truly useful, it has to get that distinction. If an AI can perfectly model a fictional world, derive new truths from it, and use that fiction to inspire a solution in the real world, does it even matter that it started as a hallucination?
It brings us right back to the planning example. My retirement plan is a hallucination. It hasn't happened. It might never happen. But that hallucination dictates what I do with my paycheck today.
We're all navigating these overlapping worlds of our own making. We're constantly referencing things that don't exist to make decisions about things that do. And this paper suggests it's time we built our computers to recognize that multiverse rather than forcing them to pretend there's only one flat, boring reality.
Safe places to dream. It's a really compelling argument for a more structured, but also a more imaginative AI.
And a more reliable one.
Well, thank you for helping us unpack all this. It's dense stuff, but I feel like I understand why my chatbot lies to me a little bit better now.
It's not lying. It's just storytelling in the wrong room.
Exactly. And for you listening, think about that the next time you're planning your week. You're just running your own internal simulation, checking your own guardrails. Thanks for taking the deep dive. We'll see you next time.